This is the California Report podcast. Hi, everybody. I'm Lily Jamali. It is that time again, Obamacare time.
Life can change in an instant. Be covered when it does with a health plan through Covered California.
We offer. Starting today, Californians will hear ads like that one encouraging them to sign up for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. KQED's April Domboski explains that this year, California has one of the longest enrollment periods of any state.
In the early years of the Affordable Care Act, people had 3 months to sign up for a plan. This year, the Trump administration cut that in half. But California runs its own marketplace and is giving consumers here the full 3 months to choose a plan. James Scolari is with Covered California.
We know that consumers often wait until the end to sign up for anything, whether it's filing taxes or signing up for health care.
Shopping in the federal marketplace ends December 15th. Scolari says a lot of people aren't thinking about health insurance during the holidays, and that's why California is going till the end of January.
So it's really an attempt to make sure that people have the time and the opportunity to get quality health care coverage.
But there is another change to the health law that California can't work around. At the end of last year, Republicans in Congress eliminated the penalty people had to pay if they didn't have insurance. Scolari says their studies show that 12% of people who would have bought a plan now won't.
However, we think, you know, the bigger penalty really is what happens to those consumers who decide to go without coverage and they end up with medical bills of more than $5,000 or more than $50,000.
Covered California is investing heavily in marketing and outreach. Scolari says they plan to launch their main ad campaign after the election. For the California Report, I'm April Domboski.
Let's go to San Diego now, where my co-host John Sepulvedo has been keeping tabs on the race between indicted GOP Congressman Duncan Hunter and his Democratic challenger Amar Campanajar. Now, this was supposed to be a slam dunk for Congressman Hunter. Not anymore. I'm going to let John take it from here.
The five-term Republican congressman from East County, San Diego, won his last election in 2016 by more than 30 percentage points. But according to new polls, including one from the Los Angeles Times and Berkeley, the congressman is effectively tied with his Democratic challenger, Amar Campanajar. And as a result of that, it appears that Hunter is trying to smear his opponent as a terrorist to hold on to this seat, although we can't confirm that because his campaign has not responded to numerous requests for comment, although Hunter has spoken publicly on several occasions. We're going to begin on August 22nd. This comes a day after Duncan Hunter was indicted in federal court on allegations that he misused $250,000. Hunter says the indictment is untrue and that it's part of a Democratic conspiracy.
This is modern politics and modern media mixed in with law enforcement that has a political agenda. That's what's happening right now. And it's happening with Trump and it's happening with me, and we're going to fight through it and win.
That's courtesy of News 10 in San Diego. And it should be noted that the FBI is led by Christopher Wray, who is a lifelong Republican from Georgia. The indictment alleges that Hunter was using campaign money to help pay for activities related to extramarital affairs and other personal expenses. And it includes Hunter's wife, Margaret. She was also charged with embezzlement as she oversaw Hunter's campaign finances. According to the indictment, the two spent money on transporting a rabbit on an airplane, as well as family trips to Hawaii, Italy, and Poland. Here's Duncan Hunter addressing the allegations on Fox News.
My campaign did make mistakes. There was money spent on things, not by me, but by the campaign.
Well, you also said yesterday that your wife handled a lot of the family expenses and the campaign finances. So are you saying that it's more her fault than your fault?
Well, I'm saying when I went to Iraq in 2003, the first time, I gave her power of attorney, and she handled my finances throughout my entire military career, and that continued on when I got into Congress, because I'm gone 5 days a week, I'm home for two. Whatever she did on that, that'll be looked at too, I'm sure, but I didn't do it.
Well, these media appearances were widely criticized, and Hunter stayed out of the public eye for most of September, but then at the end of last month, he appeared in Ramona, California, speaking to a group called the Intermountain Republican Women Federated. He began his speech by celebrating the American flag.
You got a flag here. It does mean something. Don't let this BS that you see on social media or in the NFL fool you. Trump has it right. This has to stand for something, or we don't stand for anything.
And we should note this audio was leaked to the Times of San Diego and is courtesy of that news organization. Well, after celebrating the flag, Hunter shared an unverified anecdote from his tour of duty in Afghanistan in which he said a mayor there molested and imprisoned a young boy.
Because in the Muslim world, girls are off limits, boys are not. So don't let anybody tell you that the Muslims think that we're a bad country because of what we have. They are disgusting.
Hunter's statement on abuse is false. In fact, a key component of Muslim doctrine is for adults to protect all children from abuse. Meanwhile, in his speech, Hunter then turned to federal law enforcement, which he said was conspiring against him.
There is a deep state. The Justice Department is corrupt, and that should scare you out of your minds.
And the so-called deep state, Hunter said, is not just trying to frame him for stealing campaign funds. They are trying to take down President Donald Trump as well.
Trump understands that the only way to fix something that is so broken as our system is to break it totally.
So just so we don't get lost in this speech, because there's a lot being thrown here, so far Hunter has said that Muslims, quote, are disgusting, and that there is a governmental conspiracy to undermine him and President Trump, and that Hunter needs to be in Congress to help Trump fight. And it's at this point that Hunter ties all these ideas together to present his opponent as a player in a wider conspiracy. And it should be noted, Amar Campanajar is a San Diego County-born U.S. citizen who happens to be of Palestinian and Mexican descent. Here's Duncan Hunter.
My opponent's name up until about 3 months ago was Amar Yasser Najjar, named after Yasser Arafat. I kid you not.
Let's stop there. That's not true. Amar Campanajar changed his name years ago because Yasser is his father's name, and his father abandoned their family, he says.
His grandfather was the mastermind and perpetrator of the 1972 Munich attack at the Olympics against the Israeli athletes. That was his grandfather.
This is an important point. This is true, but it's also true that Campanajar didn't know his grandfather, who died more than 5 years before he was born. And for the record, not that it matters, Campanajar is a Christian and has been for years, but Hunter routinely has presented him as a Muslim. And it's here where Hunter makes a turn.
Radical Muslims are trying to infiltrate the U.S. government.
This audience of Republican diehards responded to Hunter's message positively. And just a few days later, Hunter's team released this ad.
Amar Campanajar is working to infiltrate Congress. He's used three different names to hide his family's ties to terrorism. His grandfather masterminded the Munich Olympic massacre.
A Palestinian Mexican millennial.
This ad is verifiably false and has been rated so by many news organizations, including NPR. Yet, whichever way this vote goes, Hunter is going to have a tough road ahead of him. That's because less than a month after this election, on December 3rd, Hunter will have to be in court to face those charges that he took money from his campaign.
Thanks to John for that fact check. And quick note, Congressman Hunter took to direct mail this weekend, sending out a letter to constituents billed as a, quote, security alert. It features three military generals calling Campanajar a national security risk. Check it out for yourself on our Twitter page. Our handle is at CalReportTweets. Well, did you catch this quote from over the weekend? It doesn't matter. We won. That's how President Donald Trump reacted on 60 Minutes when asked about his treatment of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. Dr. Ford, of course, is the Bay Area professor who accused now Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault. The Trump administration's efforts to remake the judiciary, though, aren't limited to the nation's highest court. Take the Ninth Circuit Court, based here in San Francisco. It has struck down President Trump's travel ban and is considering the future of DACA for so-called dreamers. There are currently six vacancies out of 29 seats on that court. President Trump just nominated three judges. Here's Dan Levine, West Coast legal correspondent for Reuters.
Under this administration and Chairman Grassley over the last 2 years, they have started to vary a little bit from the historical practice and given hearings to some judges, even if their home state senators don't agree. And so that's where we are now. Senators Feinstein and Harris have both said that they oppose these nominees.
So what does this process tell us about how Dianne Feinstein came out of the Kavanaugh hearings?
From where Republicans sit, they view Senator Feinstein as bruised from the Kavanaugh hearings. They went after her very, very hard for the way that she handled Dr. Blasey Ford's allegations. Justice Kavanaugh was confirmed to the court. And I think Republicans saw a lot of their base energized in some very crucial Senate races across the country. In the last several months, the administration had been trying to work with Senator Feinstein, being a little bit deferential with her in terms of Ninth Circuit nominees. So I don't think it's any surprise that now, coming out of the Kavanaugh hearings and given the way that they view her, that they've decided to go to war like this.
Dan Levine is the West Coast legal correspondent for Reuters. Dan, thank you so much for your time this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
We're going to turn now to the family separation story. A federal judge in San Diego has approved a settlement allowing migrant families who were split apart at the border to reapply for asylum. But many families may be excluded from the deal. KQED's Julie Small has more.
Attorneys with the nonprofit El Otro Lado recently fanned out through El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras to meet with parents who were deported without their children and are still separate from them. Attorney Erica Pinheiro says the group spoke with 40 parents who must decide whether to leave their children in the U.S. to seek asylum, even if it means never seeing them again.
The parents are really desperate and feel very powerless to help their children, but at the same time don't want their children returned to them in home country because of the real threat of persecution or death that they face.
American Civil Liberties Union attorney Lee Gallant says the agreement reached with the U.S. government will help at least 1,000 parents and kids get a second chance to pass a credible fear interview, the first hurdle in applying for asylum.
And if they pass, they and their child will get to pursue asylum in more full immigration hearings. If the parents don't pass, the child will get to have an asylum hearing. And if they pass, both parent and child will get to have a more full process to seek asylum.
But those who've already been deported won't be eligible for that relief. Homeland Security officials have repeatedly said they have no legal obligation to deported parents, and the settlement agreement explicitly states the government does not intend to, nor does it agree to, return any removed parent to the United States. The settlement does allow for exceptions.
We will be looking into a number of cases where we believe the parent may have been misled or coerced to see which cases to bring to the government's attention.
Pinheiro says many of the men and women she spoke with meet that criteria.
They were told that the only way that they could really have contact with their child was to get out of detention, and the only way to do that was to sign their own removal order.
Altogether, the government deported 414 parents without their children, according to court documents. A final hearing on the settlement is set for November 15th. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small.
Now, we've been covering the Trump administration's immigration policies through the lives of people at a migrant shelter in Tijuana, Mexico. KQED's Farida Javala Romero reports that for deportees, there's a glimmer of hope that they'll get back on their feet thanks to jobs along the border.
Mayor Nereida Fuentes holds a pair of scissors and gets ready to inaugurate a fair at a crowded park in the city of Tecate, just east of Tijuana.
A la cuenta. Uno.
Fuentes is flanked by a gaggle of government officials and a beauty queen wearing a sparkly crown. She cuts a bright red ribbon.
Tres. Felicidades, Tecate.
The annual event aims to promote the area's commerce and industry. And Mayor Fuentes has a message to Mexicans who are getting deported from the U.S. We need skilled workers, people who speak English. There are opportunities here too, she says. Fuentes says her small city is seeing an influx of deportees. Many of them had built a life in the U.S. She says many more deportees land in the nearby and much bigger city of Tijuana, where Bernabé Esquer Peraza heads economic development. He was one of the dignitaries at the Tecate Fair.
We have a lot of industry.
His agency helps connect job seekers and employers, and Esquer says they have 8,000 openings listed.
You know, we build a lot of medical devices, a lot of televisions. We build the Toyotas which they sell around the world. The plant is in Tijuana.
Esquer touts new foreign investment worth millions of dollars in the city and says Tijuana is going through a building boom.
Well, a lot of people get deported. They have the construction experience. They can have a work immediately. Immediately.
Finding work, even if it pays a lot less than in the U.S., is something that gives hope to deportees like Sergio Saucedo. He found himself recently at the Casa del Migrante shelter after decades of living in the U.S. Saucedo had just found a kitchen job at a casino in downtown Tijuana, 3 days after he was deported. He says he got hired because he has 10 years of experience as a cook in the Los Angeles area. He says it's a chance to move forward after he was deported with nothing. His first priority? To save money for a cell phone so he can call his two American children. For the California Report, I'm Farida Yavala Romero in Tijuana.
California Attorney General Javier Becerra is joining another fight against the Trump administration. This time, it's a battle over debt relief for students defrauded by Corinthian Colleges, which had its headquarters in Southern California. KPCC's Alyssa Jong Perry has more.
The Obama administration shut down the for-profit campuses in 2015 for allegedly targeting low-income students and forcing them to take out predatory loans. The government then set up a program that would help the students erase all their debts. Last year, the Department of Education, led by Betsy DeVos, halted the process. DeVos said she wanted to review the policy because it was going to be too costly for taxpayers. California sued. Then DeVos said Washington would give students partial debt relief. That sparked another suit, this one by students. Now Becerra, along with seven other states, has filed a friend of the court brief in support of the lawsuit. Becerra says Corinthian's type of predatory student lending reminds him of the 2008 housing crisis.
What's worse is it's not right when the federal government is aiding and abetting those who have defrauded thousands of students in America.
More than 50,000 student claims across the U.S. are still waiting to be processed. For the California Report, I'm Melissa Jong Perry in Santa Ana.
And finally, over the weekend in Rome, Pope Francis canonized the first Salvadorian saint, Oscar Romero, the Archbishop of San Salvador. He was assassinated in 1980. And in Los Angeles, more than 1,000 people held a vigil at the Church of St. Thomas the Apostle to celebrate the occasion. Reporter Pilar Marrero has more.
It's been more than 38 years since Oscar Romero was killed during Mass by a right-wing death squad, starting a bloody war that turned many Salvadorans into refugees. During his time as Archbishop, Romero spoke out for the poor and against the repression and killings by the military regime in his country. Lucas Castillo, who was at the vigil Saturday, fled El Salvador the same year that Romero was killed. He says he remembers Romero as a very special man.
Very kind. He talked to anybody that he got close to. Even though he didn't know anybody, he was so friendly, so kind with anybody.
Silvia Alvarenga says she's glad that after 38 years, Romero is finally being canonized.
And I know all the Salvadorians, we love him. We feel like a family. And he's the saint for all the world, for all the humanity.
El Salvador's civil war ended many years ago, but life there today is still marked by high levels of violence. Attendees of the vigil say the new saint provides Salvadorians with hope that the peace and justice Romero preached in life can someday be realized. For the California Report, I'm Pilar Marrero in Los Angeles.
Support for the California Report comes from Block Construction, a builder committed to enhancing communities in the Bay Area and Central Coast. BLACH.com. Block Construction, together building greatness. The Pacific Auction Company, dedicated to making fundraising auctions successful for 16 years, serving nonprofits, schools, and foundations. Learn more at pacificauctioncompany.com. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
And that's the California Report podcast for this Monday, October 15th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Lily Jamali. Thanks for listening.